Hello, and welcome to Essential Knowledge Updates, or EKU, podcasts from the Royal College of General Practitioners. My name is Dr. Thomas Round, and I'm a GP and Academic Clinical Research Fellow. I've also recently taken over as the EKU Development Fellow, following the fantastic work of Dr. Dirk Pilat. Today I'm going to be speaking to Louise Newson, who has recently done a new EKU module on perinatal mood disorders based on the SIGN 2012 guidelines. Hi Louise, so how did you find this guideline?
I found it really interesting actually, because perinatal depression is something that I see as a female GP and mother of three. I do see a fair amount, but I think it was very interesting just coming back to the basics and looking at risk factors and who to treat and who to potentially screen for. I think it was very well laid out, clear guideline to read and take on board.
It was covering depression, so both antenatal and postnatal depression, anxiety and stress and psychosis, kind of separated off. So maybe if we just start with depression, if you could maybe just give us a bit of detail about how common that might be and how likely we might see that in our practice.
Well, I think what's interesting is obviously depression is very common, and there's antenatal and postnatal depression, and a lot of antenatal depression is the same risk factors as common garden depression that we see in general practice. So there are other risk factors, including things like an unintended pregnancy, relationship factors. So, and then postnatal depression is something that I think can be overdiagnosed, and I think this is a really grey area, and it's very difficult to actually sometimes know who are the best patients who are going to respond well to treatment, for example, because a lot of women have baby blues, and to try and tease out which of those is depression. But I think knowing the risk factors is very important, because what surprised me when I was reading the guideline was that suicide is one of the leading causes of maternal death. So there's things that we're clearly still not doing right. People are still underdiagnosed and clearly not treated properly. The other thing about depression that isn't treated is that it really does not just affect the mother, but the whole mother-baby relationship. And what I didn't know before, or I didn't really appreciate before doing this, was the relationship, like I say, between the mother and the baby, but also the detrimental effects it can have on the child as it's brought up if the mother has postnatal depression that's not been treated. So it's another reason that we need to really have a low threshold for thinking about postnatal depression and treating it as well.
Obviously, GPs, for us, depression is very common and we see it a lot. Is the presentation the same for this type of depression as we'd expect depressions that we see every day?
Yes, it often is. It can be very similar, but obviously there's issues with the bonding with the child that can be different. And I think a lot of women almost expect to be depressed because of when you're sleep deprived and you've got a whole life-changing experience if it's your first child. And I think a lot of people think, well, I expect to feel like that. It's very difficult, as indeed it is just with normal depression, to actually, for people to admit that they have a problem. The other thing that I thought was quite interesting was the Edinburgh Postnatal Depression Score. They clearly say it shouldn't be used as a screening tool. And I know practices will vary and regions will vary, but quite a lot of health visitors and midwives, I think, still use it as a screening tool. And I think this is very important that us as GPs should be aware that just because someone scores or has a normal score doesn't mean they're not depressed. Or conversely, there'll be people with a high score that are just having a bad day. It doesn't mean they actually have postnatal depression.
So from that, you're saying is, as we probably all do, it's based on a kind of a clinical history assessment, along with tools that may or may not help, but you have to use them as tools rather than as a black and white.
I think that's really important. The other thing that it does talk about, which I thought was interesting, was to actually ask about depressive symptoms. So they actually say at minimum on booking and postnatally, at 4 to 6 weeks and again at 3 to 4 months. And having recently had my third baby, no one asked me anything about depression at any of those times. And I'm not sure that it's something that we in practice do, certainly in my practice. So that's something that I think is important, because we change the way we ask depression screening questions for people with chronic diseases like diabetes, for example. Yeah. So we all should be used to asking simple questions. So that's something I think that most people could change quite easily in their practice.
Was this correct that the 10 to 15% of women have some form of postnatal depression? Is that right?
That's what it says, which is higher than I thought. But
does that include baby blues as well? Or
No, that's just depression, but then it would include mild, moderate and severe. So obviously a lot of people with mild depression will improve without medication.
Yeah. And then if you stick on the depression for the moment, you mentioned something about kind of predicting maybe like risk factors for depression. Are these risk factors different than kind of other risk factors that we might know about for depression? Is there anything different about the risk factors in these cases?
Well, like I said before, they are similar, but there are additional ones. So maternal anxiety, for example, is one. And like I said before, if the pregnancy's unintended or there are relationship factors, then that will increase your risk for antenatal and postnatal depression. The other thing is people that have baby blues do have an increased risk of postnatal depression. So again, whether it's worth people screening more carefully, I suppose, those people that have baby blues, it's worth maybe singling those people out and making sure they have extra support and knowing that that is a risk factor in itself for postnatal depression.
And then in terms of what treatment you would offer, obviously, I guess, similar to other depressed patients, you do an assessment if it's mild, moderate or severe. And obviously the guidelines might alter on depending on severity. Is that kind of the right approach to have, would you say?
Yes, I mean, it's similar. I mean, like the other guidelines for normal depression, it does say for mild to moderate depression, cognitive behaviour therapy should be considered. Which, again, there is in areas, certainly where I am, people can't access cognitive behavioural therapies very easily. The other thing, obviously, the whole issue of prescribing antidepressants to people who are breastfeeding, and there it's quite clear that which antidepressants can be used. I think that's useful for us as prescribers when we do prescribe, and they do say that SSRIs can be used in a first line, but fluoxetine, citalopram and escitalopram should be avoided. And probably citalopram is quite commonly used for depression in all sorts of people, but especially in women. So it's worth definitely avoiding that and using one of the alternatives.
And what about antenatally? If you felt someone was moderate to severe spectrum and you felt that they might benefit from antidepressants, would you prescribe them or would you maybe speak to a psychiatrist?
This is a really great area and it's something I've been interested in before, and I've looked and read various trials and evidence about it, and it's a bit woolly, I think, in these guidelines, because it says that we as GPs should review the need for antidepressants early in pregnancy, and if the treatment can be altered or stopped, then that's great. But clearly there are some women that will develop depression in their pregnancy or who have been depressed anyway and come off their antidepressants and their depression returns. So the UK Teratology Information Service say that SSRI should be avoided in late pregnancy, so which implies that we can still prescribe them in early pregnancy. There's loads of evidence that will be coming up, I'm sure, in the next couple of years stating how safe SSRIs are, but I think they're not as harmful as people thought they were a few years ago, and I think certainly in early-ish pregnancy then they can still be prescribed. But again, like I say, it's quite a grey area in these guidelines.
So I guess it would depend on the individual patient. You might have a patient who's already depressed on an antidepressant.
That's right, yeah.
And they might be thinking about a baby, so you might counsel them about coming off. Or they might become, as you say, you might assess someone they're moderately to severe depressed, so you might, as I have that discussion with them about the pros and cons. Is there any SSRIs or antidepressants that you should avoid or we should avoid prescribing?
Paroxetine, it says, shouldn't be initiated as first line in pregnancy.
Do you ever kind of initiated antidepressants in pregnancy, or has that been with a discussion with a psychiatrist? Or
I haven't done it by myself. I think it would be prudent to discuss it with a local either a psychiatrist or a perinatal physician.
Moving on, I think there's anything else we should cover for depression that we haven't discussed?
The only other thing really is it does state that we should advise women not to use St John's wort or other herbal treatments, which I think is important because so many people see herbal preparations as natural alternative treatments, which clearly they're not. So I think it's very important that we sort of ask and make sure people aren't taking other medication.
And then in the guideline, we touched on anxiety and stress, which I guess is a spectrum of depression in some ways, like a milder side of things.
Yes.
Obviously, that's very common. Is there any kind of advice from the guideline or from your own experience for GPs to offer advice for the patients?
Well, anxiety, I mean, it does state that anxiety disorders are more common than depression in the perinatal period, and antenatal anxiety is linked to poorer development outcomes of the infant. So it is important to, I guess, in some ways, screen for voice and be aware. But then it's very hard because I think a lot of women are anxious when they have a newborn infant because it's an overwhelming responsibility for them. It doesn't really say, there's a part of the guidelines talks about the benzodiazepine use, and it's saying that there are risks with giving them antenatally in the first trimester. It could increase the risk of preterm birth and low birth weight. Third trimester can affect the baby, so have neonatal withdrawal symptoms. And we should use them as a lower dose for shorter time as possible. Yeah. But I think if someone's needing benzodiazepines, it wouldn't be something that in general practice you would use or prescribe by yourself without liaising with specialists in this area.
Yeah. Just going back, sorry, just about the depression, the one cases I've struggled with are where it's difficult to work out if it's baby blues or is it actual depression when the patient first presented. And what I found was useful, I was just using time to see what happened. And actually she did become more depressed. I don't know if that's, you've had experience with that, where they've had, patients have had some baby blues and they've either got better or they've actually gone on to become worse. So I think it can be quite hard sometimes for us as GPs to kind of work out, is it going to be self-limiting or is it going to progress?
Totally, and I think that's what I was saying, because baby blues is an independent risk factor for developing postnatal depression, it's important to follow these women up anyway. But with depression, it will come out in time as to whether they improve or not, and you need to make a diagnosis of depression.
Moving on to perinatal psychosis, obviously this is probably something we don't deal with very often. Can you give me a bit of background about this, how we might deal with it?
Yeah, it's obviously a lot less common. We're not likely to see nearly as, we won't see as much as with depression. It says in the guidelines between 1 and 2 per 1,000 women.
Yeah.
And it usually occurs in the first month postnatally. Most women seems to occur in those who have risk factors. So, and they state the risk factors, as things like people that have a pre-existing psychotic illness, which isn't surprising. And especially those who have had a previous antenatal admission for a psychosis or bipolar disorder. The other risk group are those with a family history of an affected psychosis. And obviously there will be some women that have been on a mood stabiliser before they became pregnant, and this might have been stopped for whatever reason. So those will understandably have an increased risk.
And just going on to the mood stabilisers, which ones would you not use in pregnancy and which ones would you obviously discuss with patients about stopping beforehand?
Well, it's something which, again, I didn't know much about because we don't use these drugs very often or certainly don't initiate them, but valproate, when used as a mood stabiliser, should never be used for women. And it actually says in these guidelines they shouldn't be used for women of childbearing potential because of the harm that they can cause for the unborn child. So they say that carbamazepine and lamotrigine can be used. The other thing is those people that need the anti-epileptic drugs as mood stabilisers should be prescribed a high dose of folic acid, so 5 milligrams. And this ideally should be from before they conceive and then carry on at least through the first trimester.
Patients maybe we have a bipolar who on mood stabilisers, we'd want to look at, obviously if they're a woman of childbearing age, they're thinking about having a baby, maybe pre-counsel them. Maybe have a discussion with a psychiatrist about the safety of coming off it before having a baby and kind of facilitating that discussion, really.
Yes.
Was there anything else on psychosis that you think about?
The only other thing is those people who, or women taking lamotrigine should have their levels measured, which is something that we're not, it's not something that we do that normally.
Any other issues do you think for in psychosis? So a bit rare, but I got your figures there, 1 to 2 in per 1,000.
Yes. Just breastfeeding, it's not contraindicated to take these drugs when breastfeeding, but it does say you should have a full discussion with women about any potential risks as well as the benefits.
Recapping then again about the whole guideline, and what do you think the kind of key 1 or 2 take-home messages are and easy things that GPs can implement into their routine practice that would have the biggest impact from this guideline?
I think the most important thing is Well, I think the few things is early diagnosis obviously leads to prompt treatment and improves outcome both for the mother and the baby. So I think it's having a low threshold for screening women with high risk factors. So yeah. Being aware of the risk factors for both depression and psychosis and actively screening these women. And I think having a low threshold to promptly treat women appropriately so we can improve their outcome.
Thank you very much, Louise. You were listening to EKU 10 podcast on perinatal mental health based on the SIGN 2012 guidelines. Many thanks again for listening.